Hey there, this is All The Best with me, Georgia Moody. Our show today is Don't Stop Me Now. Yes, that's right, like the song from Queen. We're bringing you stories of people whose flames burn brightly against the odds. Like this woman.
I can always remember having to stutter. It's very hard because the more you try to speak, the more you can't speak. You can't get your words out. The technique that the opera singers use, speak on the full breath. Speak. Interesting how your stutter affects your whole life. It almost put a fear into me, fear of going into an actual cafe, restaurant, and ordering. So I'd always get
fear of answering the telephone. That was a huge panic attack. Just always a huge fear. I would have to talk to the attendant and tell them what I wanted, just to date somebody. Very scary. Because he's going to find out I stutter and he won't want to take me out anymore. So it's constantly a fear of rejection. One of the reasons why I married Bill was because I wasn't really in love with Bill. But he didn't mind my stutter. I often fall down because I'm not practicing the way I should. A person has problems with my stutter, that is just too bad, you know? It doesn't bother me anymore.
That was Irina Tanberg. She's an artist living in Corrimal, and that story was produced by Mel Tolney. Our next story is produced by our youngest contributor here on All The Best, Liam Neerham. He's just 16. And he brings you this story about the oldest person we've ever featured on our program. Ruth Frith is 103 years old. And although she's given up running, she still competes in international masters competitions. That is, of course, if she can find anyone in her age category to compete against. After spending a lifetime on the sidelines, Ruth is making up for lost time.
My name is Ruth Fripp, and I'm 103, and I have just made a new world record when I was in New Zealand in March. I compete in the hammer, the shot, the discus, the javelin, and the weight. I used to run, but I don't now.
Ruth Frith must only weigh about 48 kilos. She is no taller than 5 foot and looks like a breeze may blow her over. Her wrinkles even had wrinkles, but so would you if you were 103. My great-grandmother lived until she was 104, but she was nothing like Ruth. She was dressed like your typical grandma, complete with cardigan and comfortable shoes. But just like Clark Kent from Superman, Ruth has a hidden power. When she changes into her uniform to represent her country at the World Master Games, she's definitely not your typical old lady.
I am, at the moment, the oldest athlete competing in the world. I've always been an athlete. So I would say all my life I have been an athlete. Yeah, my favourite is the hammer. And that's what I made the world record for being 100 over in New Zealand. I had to compete with the 85ers, I think, because there are no other 100 in the world. I'm the oldest one in the world. Every 4 years, you go up another standard. Now, if I was going to go to Brazil next year or the year after, I will be 100, well over 100. And there still won't be anyone to compete against. So I don't think going and taking all that money to get there and everything is worth it just to get a medal. It doesn't appeal to me.
Nice one, mate.
Yeah, that's another thing that alters with your age. You either start with a 4K hammer, then it comes down 3, then it comes down the next 4 years, and then it comes 2.
You can do your hand like that.
At the moment, I throw a 2K hammer, and I made the new world record in New Zealand this year with a 2K hammer, and I did 16 metres.
Every Saturday, Ruth turns up at Cole Bennett Park in Brisbane to train with her daughter Helen. Helen is 73 and is a former Olympian herself. She competed in high jump and long jump. And with a coach like that, Ruth is absolutely committed to her training.
Because you're going away by that much. You can't afford to do that to your opponent.
Oh, well, I have a gym. I have the weight bench. I have the bicycle. And I do weights. Then we go down to the oval, which is a little A's oval, and Helen will do so many shots, and I criticise what she's doing wrong. Then I go in and do shot or discus or whatever we're doing, and she criticises me. And that's how we help each other in becoming better. No, I don't get tired or anything like that. As a matter of fact, with training, we start 8:30 in the mornings down at the Oval, and I could train and train and train. I love training, I really do. 8:30 till 10:30, and that doesn't worry me. At 103.
At 103, Ruth seems unstoppable. It's hard to believe, at one stage of her life, Ruth was mostly on the sidelines, watching and not doing any sport herself. But she hadn't started out like that. As a child, Ruth was blessed with athletic genetics, straight from her father, who was a runner himself.
My father often used to say to us, "This house I built with the money I won in racing." Now, they did get good money in those days for running, and they did travel, because he went to Tasmania to run in some big race, and he won it. My father was always very proud that he built our house on the money he won on. Yeah. Well, my father was, of course, I'm going back, because my father was well over 100, but there was only more or less sprinting and you could throw the javelin and those sort of things. But running was the main thing. In my husband's day, it was running and long jump.
That was how men played sport back in their childhood. But it was a different story for women. Ladies weren't really supposed to do sport.
Now, I went to Sydney to live in 1960. Now, girls were not allowed to run, junior girls, which is up to 18, I was not allowed to run a 200. You could run 150, but you couldn't run 200. So the times changed as to what, and there was no such thing as a hammer and all that. That was unheard of. You could do shot and you could do discus, but you couldn't do hammer.
And then Ruth did what many women of her generation did. She married and became a mother and had kids. There was no time for doing sports, just watching. Ruth became an official at state games and helped hundreds of young athletes find their feet. And they would never forget it, even years later.
When you're 15, you look totally different to when you're 40. But they would come up to me and say, "Hello, Mrs. Ruth. I used to compete at a sports ground." And I'd have to think, who on earth are you? But it is nice to think girls remember.
But when Ruth was a senior citizen, she decided that she was sick of standing by the sidelines and minding the bags. And straight away, she proved that she was a champion herself.
My most prized possession in athletics is the first medal that I ever won. I was 74, I think, yeah. And that's when I first joined the Masters. When I joined it and I went to Rome and competed. Actually, in the Masters, the first big race I ever ran was against a New Zealander. And we did the shot and we did the discus. She was down, but she didn't turn up. And then the next one she turned up at, and I said, "You didn't come to the shot and the discus." And she said, "No, I'm saving myself for the 100. And I thought, "Over my dead body, will you win the 100? It was my first big race internationally, and to think I beat the New Zealander, which I've sworn I'll never go back to New Zealand again since this year. So that was my greatest thrill, was to race against the New Zealander at 100 metres. I came first. That's when I made my first world record. It felt marvellous to beat a New Zealander.
Ruth Frith is 103. Just think of how much the world has changed in the time she's been alive. The internet, cars, computers, two world wars, and the civil changes and cultural changes of the 20th century. But some things haven't changed at all, like Ruth's love of sport.
I think it gives you a sense of freedom, being an athlete. You can run, you can do all those sorts of things. So I think it gives you that sense of freedom, and because I love climbing trees, and I was getting trouble about that. But I do love sport from the primary school, and here I am 103 and I still love sport. The world doesn't come to an end because you don't win. But I really do think the sheer love of doing it or being there overcomes everything. Whether you win or you lose, doesn't matter. I should be stopping right now because I'm running out of competitors. There's nobody over 100. There's no 90s even. When the body tells me to stop, that's when I'll stop. You're born to run. You're born to walk. You're born to swim. It's in your genes, and it's when you're born, all these things. But then it's up to you, if you're given a gift, but it's up to you to use it. Don't let the gift die because you weren't interested enough to get involved with it. But always go out and do your best, no matter what it is. Do your best. And if you do your best, well, you can't be disappointed because you did the most possible thing, you did your best. I still say, even though you're given a gift and it's up to you to use it, you also have to train to try to be better. I don't listen to anybody who says, "Oh, you should give it up, you're too old." I don't listen to that sort of talk. I always think, well, they're either jealous of what you do or they can't be bothered doing it. So I just go ahead and live my own life.
Ruth Frith. That piece was produced by Liam Neerham. You're listening to All the Best, and today we're bringing you stories of people whose flames burn brightly against the odds. Just a heads up, there's a language warning on this next story. Miriam, or Mim, is 20 years old. Reaching that age is a huge achievement in itself, given what she went through when she was a teenager. Mim spoke with All the Best contributor Rachel Fisher, who she's known since they were 15. Here's Rachel.
Regrets collect like old friends, here to relive your darkest moments.
I met Mim when I was 15 years old, but it wasn't really until we were about 18 that I began to even see any signs of depression in her behaviours. I think maybe it took a bit of growing up to notice a friend in need. To this day, I really couldn't tell you if her depression was caused by genetics it could have been her problems with her family and her friends. Or maybe even it was just her feeling a little bit lost and alone as a teenager, and it just got worse from there.
I'm Miriam and I'm 20 years old, and I would describe my teenage years as a bit of a mix-up of dramas. Dramas with my family and boys and myself. I was really bad at self-harming, and I used to do it either physically or emotionally, and the emotional side was definitely with boys and hanging out with the wrong crowd.
I'm Trish Morrow. I'm a registered psychologist. I'm 48 years old. I'm a mother of three teenagers.
My little sister is 9 years old, and she is in year three at school at the moment. I feel bad for her. Like, she's kind of got a little bit of dyslexia, and my mum doesn't sort of, like, she knows she does, but she is kind of like, well, we know she's not going to be a genius, so why sort of try? Whereas I think that if you put effort in, she'll get better. So I'm the one that does all the homework with her and reads to her and makes sure that she gets everything ready for school and stuff, and that's sort of not my position, but I do it anyway.
Part of the problem with being a young person trying to become an adult is that you often think, I should be able to fix things myself. If I want people to know I'm growing up, I am growing up and I've got to do all this. So I guess for a young person who's really feeling like things are getting beyond their ability to control and deal with, they need others around them to notice and not hound them, but maybe make some suggestions about where they could get help.
While we were growing up, I really could never have told you that she was performing any kind of self-harm. It's only in recent years even that I've actually seen the aftermath of her cutting. It really just made me wish even more that there was something I could have done to help her back then. And it's honestly not until you hear Mim's stories that you can even begin to comprehend the reasons why someone would want to hurt themselves like that.
All throughout high school, I used to cut myself on a pretty regular basis, like for a couple of months. It was every day, twice a day, if I could. With anything, I burnt myself with hair dryers. I cut myself with knives. I'd write words sometimes. And I just cut myself to take away the pain that I was feeling and make myself numb.
I guess if I was going to offer any advice to anybody about helping a friend, particularly for young people who don't necessarily have the knowledge and skills to be able to help a person see their way out of a problem, the best starting point to helping someone is just to do what we call active listening. It's really simple. It's not about finding an answer to their problem. It's not about telling them the best way to fix it. All you do is what we call reflect. You reflect back what you're hearing. It might sound really simple, but it's amazing how if you hear someone saying what you're feeling, you can start to feel a little bit better and you can start to see the problem better.
I pretty much had the same group of friends throughout high school since probably year eight. I guess I didn't tell them because I knew that they wouldn't have accepted it and they would have. I remember telling one of my friends about it, or she saw one of my cuts or something and just said that I was doing it for attention. So I knew that they weren't mature enough to understand the situation and understand what was going on. Chris was the first boy. One night I saw him at Terrigal. And he saw me and I think he just walked up to me, grabbed my hand and walked me down to the beach. And we had sex. And as soon as we were finished, he got up and walked back to the beery. And he just left me there. Like, didn't say anything else to me. And that was it. And I was so pissed off.
I remember when she first opened up to me about Chris and what was happening. And I was just gobsmacked. I wasn't really sure at that point in time if she genuinely thought that that's the way that people treated other people, or if that she just accepted that because it's what she thought she deserved. I remember being so excited when one day she turned to me and she said, it was something like, I'm so sick of him, he treats me like shit, and I just want him out of my life. and I remember being so excited for her.
I think I do like myself now as a person. Like, I think before I definitely put up a front of being this big tough girl with like no emotions, and like I didn't want to be seen as weak for having emotions and stuff. I used to wear makeup every day. I used to put on heaps of makeup, and I'd do my hair and I'd do the nails and stuff, and I'd try and just present myself as being happy and okay with the way I looked and stuff, when really I wasn't. Like, I couldn't go outdoors without wearing makeup because I would be worried about what people would think about me. I'm a lot gentler, I'm a lot calmer. I used to have a lot of anger, and now I'm not. But I don't think I would be the same person if I didn't go through all of that stuff.
Mim and I are 20 now, and I swear to God, every time I see her, I'm more and more impressed with how far she's come. She tackles all her problems head on, and that's something that is really hard for anybody, whether you've had depression or not. But my favorite thing about seeing how far she's come is that she doesn't apologize for her past. She chooses to see it as something positive that's made her a better person, a more well-rounded person. And I'm just really happy for her that she's finally really happy.
That story was produced by Rachel Fisher. We're going to finish today with the song which, in fact, inspired today's theme. We know this is super daggy, but we're going to do it anyway. This is Queen with Don't Stop Me Now. Tonight I'm going to have myself a real good time. I feel alive. And the world, I'm turning inside out. I'm floating around in ecstasy. So don't stop me now. Don't Stop Me Now by Queen. That's it for All the Best. Head to our website, allthebestradio.com, for more on the stories you've heard today. While you're online, you can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at _allthebest. All the Best is produced at FBI Radio Sydney in association with SYN in Melbourne. Our show is distributed across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible with funding from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Today's show was produced by Mel Tolney, Liam Neerham and Rachel Fisher. Our features executive producer is Belinda Lopez, and our executive producers are Jordana Caputo, Eliza Salos and Jesse Cox. I'm Georgia Moody. See you next week.